connect to WDIY with our new streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. You can stream live or catch prior programs under the Public Affairs tab. Scroll down to Your Financial Choices and peruse all of the available topics. Our topic tonight is First Half 2021 Market Recap and Trends. We are live tonight, but we are not going to take calls this evening. We don't have our call screener this evening. So if you have questions, you can send those through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. There is a place to submit questions on yourfinancialchoices.com. Otherwise, you can send them to us and we can respond to them at leisure if we do not get to it through the show this evening. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. You can, again, send questions through email. I apologize. I'm so used to having live calls. I'm mixing up my words here. So email through yourfinancialchoices.com. I would like to welcome my guest this evening, William Henderson. Bill is Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. He joined the team with more than 30 years of experience, including 26 years at BlackRock. Bill leads the firm's investment department, chairs the Internal Investment Committee, and directs all investment research efforts. In this role, he provides investment analysis and assists the advisory teams with portfolio strategy and asset allocation direction. He meets frequently with representatives from global asset managers to discuss their views about the economy and financial markets. And he lends his own current market observations in Valley National Financial Advisors, the weekly commentary email newsletter. Bill is a native of Pennsylvania and received his undergraduate degree and graduate degrees from Penn State University in the areas of finance and investments. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thanks, Lori. Thanks for having me back.
And Bill has been on the show before, but it's the first time we have him in studio. So it's a lot of fun to have him here so that we can talk together and get his insights on everything that's happening in the market and some of the trends. So I thought, Bill, that maybe what we could do is kind of do a little bit of education first at the beginning part of the show and then talk about some of the trends and the market commentary and the market recap, because I think it kind of helps people put it in perspective and kind of understand when we're giving those kinds of recaps. So one of the things we often hear about when we're talking about investments is the importance of holding a diversified portfolio. Can you explain what that means to our listeners?
Sure. I mean, a diversified portfolio essentially means you're not holding a portfolio or a basket of investments in one particular asset class. So the type of asset classes there are, there's cash, stocks, bonds, and then hard goods like real estate, gold, commodities, things like that. And generally, we like to say that an investor, a prudent investor, should have a diversified portfolio of investments. So they should have a certain amount of their assets allocated to cash, a certain amount to stocks, a certain amount to bonds, and then, you know, hard goods like real estate and so on. And that really depends on your investment horizon. So someone that's very risk averse, meaning they hate risk, maybe they don't want to own a lot of stock. But if they're okay with risk, they want to own a lot of stock. You really want to have a diversified portfolio, but it really depends on what's that person's appetite for risk. And the two have to match and line up in order to form sort of the perfect portfolio for an individual.
And I have mentioned before on prior shows that sometimes that's really the high level when they talk about an allocation to stocks and bonds. Diversification even goes beyond that within those categories, like the asset classes. And can you just give us some of the terms that we might see in asset classes that
Sure.
we would look for in diversification?
Sure. I mean, cash is pretty simple. You either have currency, so dollars, for instance, are now cryptocurrencies, or you could own treasury bills, which are generally considered like cash, and then money market funds. So that's sort of your cash bucket. And then next would be bonds. But even in the bond spectrum, you could have high yield bonds. So that would be like what used to be called junk bonds. High yield meaning they yield higher than investment grade bonds. Then you could have corporate bonds, those bonds issued by corporations that everyone's heard of, AT&T, Verizon, Walmart, names like that. And then lastly, or also in this, you could have government bonds. So U.S. Treasuries are considered the safest bonds, and that's sort of the bellwether to measure all other credits by. The other asset category I mentioned were equities, so that's stock, where you buy stock in a company. But there's also different types of stock. You have large cap stocks. So this is a company, large cap means large capitalization. So when you add up the value of all the shares of stock outstanding, does it add up to a big number? So Google is considered a large cap stock, a lot of stock, big value, adds up to a big number. Small caps would be same thing, small capitalization stocks. These are ones where you add up the value of the company and it's very small. It doesn't fit into the same category. So even within equities, within bonds, within cash, you have variations of what each type of security is, and smaller scale inside of each category.
So one of the reasons it's important to have diversification, and as we go on to talk about trends, is in a diversified portfolio, as some of the trends we're going to talk about, things could be moving differently within those categories depending on what's going on in the overall economy or market. We've seen things like energy, you know, have its heyday and have seen it, you know, drop and then go back. So you diversifying, you're pairing something that may not always go in the same direction, and that helps you control the volatility in the portfolio.
Right. I mean, the energy was a good example. And, you know, people within the various industries, you can have things that offset each other. So coming out of the pandemic, the, quote, opening stocks were names that you thought were going to do well once the economy opened up. Travel and leisure, restaurants, movie theaters, those were the opening stocks. But during the pandemic, you saw names like Zoom, Costco, you know, grocery store names, Netflix, because everybody was staying at home. They did well. So you can have big sector rotations. So from one category to the other, over a course of 6 months, generally a year, we saw that big trade earlier in this year when everyone said growth was out because the pandemic was winding down. So let's get out of growth and now let's get into value. And the big value trade was on at the beginning of this year. And that trade more or less played itself out. And we have seen all indices now come, you know, pretty much in parity in well into the double digits for the S&P, the NASDAQ, and the Dow through the second quarter.
And then we also have diversity in domestic and international.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this could be a topic for an entire radio show, all the different, you know, variations among all the different categories. But you have international, and even international, you have international large cap, you have international small cap, international mid cap. You have regions of the world. So you have EMEA, which is Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. You have South America. You have the Far East, so you know, Japan, Asia. All types of categories within the bigger picture, and each of them can get narrowed down to a smaller picture.
And so all of this comes into play when we're talking about investing and kind of understanding diversification. And that's why sometimes when we're watching certain trends, we might see what and how it might affect your own portfolio. So it's important to pay attention to some of these things. We are going to continue our discussion with Bill Henderson, Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. If you have questions, you have to email those tonight, and that would be through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. If you have questions, we'll try to monitor that email and answer those questions. If we don't get to them this evening, we will certainly reply back to them, you know, over the course of the next day or two. So again, you're listening to Your Financial Choices. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY's Board Member of the Month for July is Cheryl Hotney. Cheryl is one of the founding members of the Lehigh Valley Community Broadcasters Association, the nonprofit organization that started and operates WDIY. She was elected to the Board of Directors in 2017 and is currently Board President. Thanks for your dedication to WDIY and public radio, Cheryl. Read more about WDIY's Board of Directors at our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. I have with me in the studio this evening Bill Henderson, Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. We're going to do a little bit of first half of 2021 market recap and trends. I think we just talked about some basic terms about people's portfolio. That's to pull them in. And now, Bill, I think it would be important to talk about some terms that financial advisors use regularly and that we hear in the financial news, which may not be understood by the average investors. So many people are afraid to ask because they don't want to look like they don't know. So can we go over some of those terms, starting with more economic terms like GDP? What Sure. does it stand for? How does it move? What does it tell us? Why should we care?
Okay. Yeah.
I think it's a term we should care about because we hear about it all the time.
We should. They love to talk about GDP, and this is I think like if I think back in my economics professor, Econ 101. I think he wrote on the board the day one. You know, GNP. It used to be called GNP, Gross National Product. Now it's called Gross Domestic Product, which really is just if you add it up, the dollar value of all finished goods and services produced inside a country's borders. So it's essentially the sum of, they list it as C plus I plus G, which is consumption plus investment plus government investment and spending. Those three things go together and get added together to create a country's output. And, you know, generally it's considered the measure of growth for a particular country. When you talk about is a country growing or shrinking, you always measure that in terms of GDP up, GDP down. That would be basically during a recession, that's when you have the GDP shrinking. So prior to the pandemic, the U.S.'s GDP was around $22 trillion. That's the sum of all the activity that I mentioned was about $22 trillion. As the economy shut down last year, it was a drastic decrease in economic activity. We saw a 30% drop in the entire economy. That was a massive fall away of GDP for the United States, probably a record, I'm sure it was. So since then, like for the first quarter of this year, we've seen an increase of 6.4% of GDP. So that means of the base of 22 trillion, you know, after the pandemic, now it's growing again, which is what you want your country to be experiencing. Generally, an economy that's growing is producing more jobs for more people, and you could say the overall health and welfare of the population is improving.
So when they talk about the 6.4% growth level in the first quarter of 2021, is that compared to the prior year or the last quarter?
Last quarter.
Okay, so always the last quarter.
The rate, it was, let's see, I'm guessing, I believe it was somewhere 3, 4%. So what has happened is we had huge jumps from the big fall away, and now we're actually looking at more modest increases. So the expectations for the second quarter of this year is for around 7%. Now, by all measures, historically, 7% is a very big number, but it's coming off of last year's very poor number. So we're going to see some big jumps, but it's almost like you need to do a chain weighting from 2019 to 20 to 21 to get to really see, you know, how the economy grew. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we saw a lot of measures put into the economy that really helped us come out of the pandemic and helped get the economy through what was, you know, really, as far as I know, the worst recessionary period.
Mm-hmm. So we would expect to see GDP go up as people are getting back out on the roads and consuming and traveling and
yeah, there's nothing right now in any economist forecast for a recession. Mm-hmm. And that would be, you'd see negative GDP prints. So
okay,
from one quarter to the next, a decline in activity. You know, the Fed is keeping interest rates at zero. Banks are healthy. Unemployment is falling. Inflation, you know, while it's out there, isn't something to be concerned about yet. And, you know, Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve Chair, it wants to see unemployment and inflation both at a level that he feels is comfortable for the measures that they want to use. So interest rates low, all the other things I mentioned point to, you know, continued economic success rather than a recessionary forecast.
Okay, so you mentioned inflation. Let's talk about inflation a little bit. So, you know, we're hearing terms. It's so funny when I hear new buzzwords. I remember when we first started hearing QE, quantitative easing. Everybody was talking about QE. Now everyone's talking about transitory inflation. You've been in this business a long time and in, you know, that fixed income world, maybe transitory is a word that we've used, but I had not really heard that before. So can you talk a little bit about inflation and what we're hearing now, this term transitory inflation?
Sure. And it is interesting. Transitory, while you were saying that, I was trying to think if it's new to me. I don't recall it really being a buzzword until, you know, recently, because we haven't had inflation. You know,
yeah,
if you look back, the
good
federal,
point.
You know, Powell, Jay Powell is trying to have an average of 2%. We've had a 2% inflation year over year. We've had way below that. So there hasn't been, the reason we haven't said transitory, because there's been no inflation. So you can't have transitory anything if you don't have it at all. So inflation, I'll start with that. I mean, it's really simple. It's when prices for goods or services increase, right? Deflation is the opposite, when price of goods or services decrease. So I'll give you two quick examples over my lifetime. So when I started driving a long time ago, right, we don't need to know when, in the 80s, in the early 80s, I was driving a car. Gasoline was about a dollar a gallon.
That's what I remember, okay? Too,
yeah,
Bill.
Right.
So we were driving at the same time.
Collect a dollar from everybody and you'd put a lot in the tank. Now it's $2.50. In some states, it's more. And we've had it prior years back, it was even higher than that. So that's inflation. Same gallon of gasoline used to cost a dollar. Now it's $2.50. It was $4 out in California. It's probably $5. So that is inflation. Now let's compare that to televisions. Recall the old 19-inch black and white televisions that we all had as kids. Maybe it was a color TV if you were a big deal. Sat on the floor. It was a piece of furniture, and everybody looked at it. 19 inches. I looked. They were about $600. Okay. I checked on Amazon today to see how much a 19-inch television is. Well, there aren't any. The smallest I can get was 32-inch LED flat screen, HD, 4K, you know, the best of the best, hangs on the wall for $129. Okay, for $600, what our parents paid for those televisions, you can get a 50-inch flat screen delivered to your door for free, and it can do about 1,000 things on that television that our old TV that only got 9 channels in 1980 could never have done. That's deflation. Much better product at a much lower cost. So that is considered inflation that you can be measured over long periods of time, and deflation that can be measured over long periods of time. Transitory, which is this word they're using today, means it's temporary. It could evaporate over time. My gasoline example can sometimes be viewed as transitory because maybe the price of gas fluctuates pretty wildly, but it's still, I don't think it'll be a dollar for a long time. Televisions are definitely not going to increase in price. Just from the parts that go into it, we've seen transistors and capacitors, all those things have come down so much in price that type of inflation and that type of deflation is not transitory. You know, it's here mm-hmm. to stay. What the Fed is saying today, that he believes we've seen big increases in prices of goods and services. So lumber, some food products, some services that go into building a house or building a building are jumping at like 5, 6, 7%. That's a really big, scary number, way bigger than the 2% that he wants. But he thinks it's temporary because there's a lot, there's a really big supply and demand imbalance right now. Everybody opened up at the same time. There were supply shortages at ports. There were demands that far exceeded what was out there for a lot of the supply. So the reason the Fed is saying it's transitory, once all this sort of balances itself out and gets more stable, the inflation will go away. And he'd rather not have transitory inflation.
Yeah. So as people start getting back to their jobs and working in factories and building refrigerators and appliances, that will also increase the supply, because there was a time where people were waiting months and months even for appliances. So that we're going to see it kind of come back slowly.
We should. And this will take some time to get worked out and the imbalances to come into play. There was a lot of talk about the chip shortage, right? Not potato chips, but microchips. And that's legitimate. There were. And I read a really interesting piece of perspective I hadn't thought about before. All of a sudden, sometime around March, April last year, everybody was allowed to work from home. How many people were set up to work from home? How many people got laptops? You and I were both issued a laptop from Valley National, right? They had to buy, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of laptops, maybe more, all around the world so everybody could work from home. That's where a lot of the chips went. We're not, you notice what we're using at work. We're using that same laptop in the office. We're not using it at home. So they don't need to buy me a new computer when I go back to work. So that use of chips is going to fade, and the chips that are needed in all the EVs, electric vehicles, that's going to be, they'll be able to put it over there. So we're going to see rebalancing of supply and demand, and I'll get into labor, you know, a little bit later in the show as we want to talk about that. But there's also labor supply and demand issues.
Okay. Folks, we're at our second break. If you have questions, you can email those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I have in the studio with me this evening Bill Henderson, Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, and we're talking about the first half of 2021 market recap and trends, and we're just kind of going over some of the economic terms that we hear used so often and kind of giving a little background on those so that we can further understand some of the impact that we that could affect our portfolio and our investing. If you have questions, you have to email those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. So, Bill, the next term, and we can talk about any number of terms. I just picked a few tonight to kind of go over. I thought it would be good. And these are ones that clients, you know, may ask me about or that we talk to clients with about. And, you know, there's always an assumption that there's some understanding, and I don't think that's a safe assumption. And one of the things that we hear talking about all the time is the yield curve. And I know this isn't televised. We are on radio, and it's hard to kind of show what the yield curve looks like. But could you explain, if you can, what is the yield curve?
Oh, thanks, Lori. I don't think you could have picked a harder one. Without the use of visuals, me explaining the yield curve will be pretty heavy, but I'll try. So essentially, if you had to, if I had time, I would ask each listener to draw their own graph with the left axis being the yield on which a bond, in this case, yield curves only pretty much refer to bonds. So they're fixed income instruments. They pay a coupon. So the left axis is yield.
And yield means the rate of return right. It's going to pay you, and you called that the coupon. So
exactly.
There's three different terms we could call that, rate, yield, or coupon.
Yeah, and they're all sort of synonymous, but they
have their issues.
I know. But yeah, so the left axis is the yield. The right axis, meaning the bottom, is time. And at each point along the time spectrum, if you were to place a dot in that chart of what yield you're going to get based on the time. So right now, today, a T-bill, so that's considered a three-month instrument, guaranteed, no risk. A one-year T-bill, guaranteed, no risk, is paying 7 basis points. Now, a basis point is another topic that I use cautiously. 1% is 100 basis points. So you're basically going out a year and you're really getting 7 basis points, which is essentially almost nothing.
Right.
You're getting almost nothing to go out a year. If you go out 5 years, you're getting just under 1%, so 73 basis points, so 0.73. If you go out 10 years, you're getting 1.28 today. So a 10-year U.S. Treasury is giving you 1.28. The line between those 3 points, 1 year, 5 year, and 10 year, is talked about, is explained as being the yield curve. So that's the line at which you're getting paid to extend your maturity of the bond. In this case, treasury bonds in my example. So that's it. And the difference between the two, then they use terms a steep yield curve, an inverted yield curve, a flat yield curve. Each of those, depending on the economist, will refer to a different time period. But generally, in a normal world, you want to get paid for extending. If I lend you a dollar in a year, you'll want to pay me I will expect a certain amount from you. But if I lend it to you for 10 years, I'm going to expect a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So when the yield curve acts oddly, so you're getting paid less to extend, or you're getting paid the same rate to extend, that's when they're usually foretelling something wrong with the economy. Could have an inverted yield curve or recessionary trends, things like that. So it's important to pay attention to, but I hope I did a decent enough job explaining.
Yeah, I think you did.
It.
I mean, I hope. I know that I'm in the business too, but I think that helped. So, and that it can communicate, activity or trends, which we're going to talk about mm-hmm. as we go through. So that's good. Yield curve. Let's talk about P/E ratio and EPS or earnings per share. And
okay.
And I don't know if you even could talk about that briefly, but once you explain what PE means and EPS
right.
means, it's easier to mm-hmm. understand, but people don't always explain what they mean when they're talking about it.
Yeah, we do take for granted that, we listen to this stuff all day long and everybody must know what PE and EPS mean and inverted yield curves. But so instead of, I'll start with EPS or earnings per share. So let's take one share of Walmart is expected to earn this much dollars per year. That's considered the earnings per share. That amount is then the denominator in a fraction where the price of Walmart is the top. So the price is Walmart's price divided by the earnings that it is projecting. And generally, the lower the price earnings ratio, and I'm putting this in the famous radio air quotes, the more attractive the price the stock is priced. So lower PEs generally mean cheap, higher PEs mean rich. Now, what analysts have done, and Wall Street analysts come up with all these terms and they come up with all these expectations and estimates, what analysts have done is now they've said, well, growth is almost as important as PEs, because we think if a company's PE ratio is really high, but they're growing at a rate that's way faster than the rest of the stock market, aren't you willing to pay more for that? And historically, people would have said no, but recent history has shown yes. I mean, tell me that Apple's PE has ever been cheap, and tell me that Apple has ever done poorly. It's an unbelievable stock. It's always done well, and yet there's been times when almost always it's considered rich. So just some terms, price-to-earnings ratio and earnings per share, briefly what it means. It's, they're not that complicated when you look at them, and you can use it to help you judge, whether a stock is rich or cheap.
Okay. And sometimes it goes back to also the diversification we talked about earlier. People aren't always looking at the PE on everything they're buying. Sometimes they're looking just for asset classes or sectors or, you know, stocks and bond.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, remember I mentioned large cap. There's large cap value, so, you know, stocks that are priced cheaply, and then there's large cap growth stocks. So even within the large capitalization segment, there's variations, again, and that's all based on the P.E. ratio.
Okay, there you go. See, we're bringing it all together, folks. We're at the halfway point. If you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. And we are talking with Bill Henderson this evening, Vice President and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. And we're talking about trends and economic terms that we hear, and we will get a market recap as well as we go through the show. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY Allentown, it is now 6:30 and 78 with clear skies. Lehigh Valley weather, tonight mostly clear, low 59. Thursday, high 82. Thursday night, low 60. Friday is going to be sunny, high 83. Friday night, low 62. And for your Saturday, it's going to be sunny, high 84. Saturday night, a chance of showers, low 67. Now, back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. Welcome back. You are listening, well, Shondi already said, your financial choices. If you have questions, you can send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. I'm speaking with Bill Henderson, VP and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors. We're going over some economic terms before we talk about trends and the market recap. More terms we hear, monetary and fiscal stimulus.
Okay. These, I think, are a little more descriptive, and I can get through these without charts and graphs, so thank you for that one. So monetary and fiscal stimulus, you hear these a lot, always in terms of government's hand in the market. So what are they going to do to help the economy, to slow the economy, to speed up the economy? And that really has to do with monetary and fiscal stimulus. So monetary stimulus, I'll start with that. That's really monetary, meaning money. It's using money to stimulate economic activity. And by we, I mean the Federal Reserve. So again, mentioning Jay Powell, he's the chair of the Fed. They have right now instituted a severe monetary stimulus policy, which is let's make money as free as possible. So right now, interest rates are zero, meaning money is free between banks. One bank can lend to another and they don't have to charge each other for it. So what does that mean? The more money into the system, the more economic activity hopefully gets created, and it allows banks to do what they do best, lend money to help other businesses start, create, add jobs, get the economy back going. One of the things that they did after the pandemic was immediately lower interest rates to zero. Mm-hmm. A critical move. We saw it in the Great Financial Crisis. That at the time, Ben Bernanke did it slowly, you know, incrementally. This Fed said, forget it, let's just drop them to zero, and we need the best, most powerful monetary stimulus we can get. Fiscal stimulus, it's a little bit different. That's when we use public spending, government, to decrease taxes. So the government spends money or they decrease taxes, both considered a way of fiscally stimulating the economy. Now, think of it this way. The $5 trillion in stimulus money that the government handed out last year to get people back on their feet, a lot of that was used to buy goods and services that if they weren't working, they weren't going to have the money to pay for. So it kept the economy moving at a point where we saw a really big drop when the whole world shut down. But then as all this money started flowing into the system, again, the first way through monetary policy in the banking, but then fiscally through stimulus this way, direct money right into the economy. Again, it helped the individuals specifically as stimulus checks hit, as payments were made and individuals could do things that they may not have been able to do had there not been a fiscal approach to things, a fiscal stimulus added to the economy.
Now, you know, one thing I hear, Bill, is people sometimes say, how is our government going to, you know, how are we going to pay all this back? And we're going to go into so much debt. But there is low interest rates right now, even for the government, right? So that,
yeah, that's a very I have actually said that to other people. I mean, I'm not a big, I don't really get that concerned about the amount of debt outstanding from the Fed. I mean, look, if somebody's willing to lend us $20 trillion, why not take the money and do other things with it? But at the same time, we do have to pay for that debt. If you look at a chart of the net interest expense that the federal government is paying right now on all of its outstanding debt, it's actually slated to go down over the next 3 years. So, and it perfect example is when you refinance your house, you did have a mortgage payment that was, you know, had $100,000 loan at
4%.
Yeah, 4%, and you have this much of a mortgage payment. Well, now I'm going to take out a $200,000 loan at 2%. I can have the same mortgage payment, but I have a bigger house. I have more money. So the cost to the government of having all that debt outstanding, although it's larger in outstanding debt, the cost to fund it has gone way down because interest rates are at zero. So one could say, is Chairman Powell talking to Janet Yellen and saying, you know, hey, make sure you keep interest rates low because I want to have this debt outstanding and I need to be able to afford it. We don't want to make those types of speculations, but certainly lower rates are also helping the government fund its debt.
Okay. And I'm just going to throw out there, since Bill mentioned about refinancing, that is something that people should look at from time to time for their own, you know, mortgages. We just talked with some folks about doing a refi, and that when they do the refinance, you could go out for a longer term mortgage. And with the lower interest rate, you could lower your payment. That could give you more money in your pocket. Or you could go for a shorter term. It might not give you more money in your pocket, but you're going to be paying it off faster with that lower interest rate. And that could be savings for you as well. So there's a number of ways that people can benefit from refinancing. And a lot of people are buying houses right now, too, and a lot with cash. But the interest rates aren't too bad now, but I'm not sure I'd buy a house right now with the cost as they're skyrocketing. But I'm getting off subject. Just thought I'd mention that since Bill mentioned, refinancing. So there are a lot of terms, Bill, that, you know, we could continue to talk about. But I do think it will help us understand the market recap and observations. So if you want, let's talk about some of the big takeaways from the first half of 2021, and then we'll talk about some of the trends maybe after that.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. So let's start with, where is the S&P from the March 23, 2020 low to June 30th of 2021? We're up 92% from March of 20, so the beginning of the bottom of the pandemic, to the end of the second quarter, up 92%, almost 100%.
Those amazing advisors out there.
So for the first half of 2021, we're up 15% on the S&P. Again, nothing to sneeze at. I mean, a 15% year in the S&P is phenomenal, and we're only halfway through. Now, that's not saying that I can foretell what's happening.
Right, because we don't look at moments in time.
But I can tell you what's happened already. And let's talk about some of the terms that we've said. Where are PE ratios? So are stocks overvalued? Would you really be smart getting into stocks that are up 92%, in that period, and then 15% this year? Well, PE ratios right now stand at about 21.5 times forward earnings. So again, the price of all the S&P stocks divided by the expected earnings of all the S&P 500 stocks, 21.5 times. So it seems high, but well below the highs we saw in the dot-com bust. So that was like everybody likes to point to the dot-com bubble of a time when things were really overvalued. They were 25 times earnings. So we're not there yet, but, we're not that far, but I don't think we are at a point where things are overvalued, and we're going to see bigger earnings increases.
I was just going to say, we should expect bigger earnings, right?
Earnings are going to be big because a lot of them are coming off of last year's lows. Mm-hmm. So the 25-year high on the S&P PE ratio is 17 times. So we're a little elevated from that at 21 times. I don't see us at panic levels in any way you look at it.
Do you know where that was before the pandemic? Did you already say that?
No, I mean, I 25-year average is 17 times.
Oh, okay.
So let's
okay.
assume it's probably a little yeah. bit elevated from there, because going into the pandemic, things were pretty, you know, pretty solid
yeah.
as well.
Yeah.
So I would say it's not lower than 17.
Okay.
Now, early in, you know, part of the recap here, early in 2021, I talked about the sector rotation from growth stocks to value. And that was really because all of last year was sort of the let's plan for the opening and how do we do that? Well, growth is the way to go. Okay, the opening has happened. The economy is going to start coming back. People are going to start buying hard goods, cars, shopping, travel and leisure. Okay, now's the time to get into value stocks. We saw that play out throughout the first quarter. And then in the second quarter, growth actually outperformed value to where we are today, where all three of the major indices, so you have the Dow, which some people would consider, you know, in industrial companies that have a value tilt to them. And then the NASDAQ, which is generally tech heavy, and that would have a growth tilt to them. They were a little lopsided at the beginning of the year. Now they've both come into the, you know, more or less parity. Both, all three, the Dow, the S&P, and the NASDAQ, are well into double-digit returns for the first half of this year. So no matter where you were diversified, a point you taught us earlier, and no matter where you were diversified among equity categories, you've done well by sticking to the plan, not jumping from one to the other, letting the rotation play out, letting the people that talk on the television all day go through that. But yet in reality, we think long-term planning is a much sounder method of getting equity returns. So the trend is also very clear. I think investors who are committed and understand that a long-term focus is really, you know, I told you about the 92% return from mm-hmm. the low of the pandemic. If you panic sold in that pandemic and said, this is the worst thing that could possibly happen, we're never coming back from this, I should sell. You lost the 92% rise we saw from that bottom. If you just said, and I talked to a lot of people during this, and I basically said to them, if you believe the economy's done globally, it's not going to come back, and the world is going to be incredibly different when we find a vaccine, then go ahead and sell. But if you think we're going to come back from this, you know, sit tight, you know, take your pain for a little bit and you know, stick to the plan. And I think most people, it seems, did that. And I'm never one for panic selling. I think it's too late to do that usually. You know,
right.
Like it's usually the missed time to sell. So I think the first half was a pretty good half for 2021. Looking at what we can expect in the second half, I think we'll see similar patterns of increase in growth, increase in earnings. The Fed is going to be paying attention to where inflation is. If it's transitory, interest rates are going to stay low. If it starts to be a little more permanent, interest rates, you know, they may start to say, okay, we're going to think about raising interest rates. This Fed has been very transparent. So, meaning Jerome Powell has specifically said, we'll tell you before we start to raise interest rates. That's really when you're going to start to see, you know, some things around the markets that are more, as they start to remove the monetary stimulus,
mm-hmm.
okay, as we talked about before.
Mm-hmm. Lots of stuff to watch here. So, we've talked about some of the terms. We've talked about the market recap and some of the trends. So what else do you watch? What kind of big things are you watching when, you know, yeah. we mentioned interest rates. That's kind of probably
right.
obvious.
I really pay attention to interest rates. I think that, you know, the bond market dwarfs the stock market in size in terms of size, but people like to listen to and hear about the stock market.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah, could you talk about that for a second? So that's
if
interesting.
If you added up all the bonds outstanding in the United States, it's probably three times the outstanding value of equities. It's just bigger. It's way bigger. And, you know, no one really talks about it because bonds are boring. I mean, even though I spent my entire career in trading bonds and managing bond portfolios, it's generally not considered the flashy. You know, you don't have the same type of trading pits that you see on the television with the New York Stock Exchange. But it's just it's a different market. But it's also very important. Interest rates, no matter what you do, you look at interest rates overlaid on a chart with the S&P 500, and you'll see they're very much related. And general, in my opinion, this is opinion. Do we need to put a disclaimer out there?
We say it's general education, yeah. Not specific advice to anyone's situation.
Thank you. The bond market is a way better forecaster of the economy than the stock market. The stock market generally reacts to, oh, it's good news, you know, this is going to be great for stocks.
Oh, everything's breaking news all the time.
I personally think that. And
So the bond market's the wallflower and the stock market's the flamingo dancer.
Yeah, I mean, but both are really important, right? And what people like to hear about. But what I'm also going to watch, you said, you know, what are you paying attention to? I'm really paying attention to labor and consumer spending. Okay, so if we...
And I want to talk about labor and consumer spending, but we're going to talk about that after this next break. It's our last break. If you have questions can be sent through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, and we'll probably have to get to those after the show, and we'll respond. If you have questions, we'll take care of them that way, and we will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000. Connect to WDIY with our new streaming app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store and enjoy the great music, news, and programs that you love on the go. The easy-to-use app is where you can listen to WDIY live or your favorite music shows on demand with our two-week archive feature. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Sieber. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. WDIY is also available on the WDIY app, and you can listen live each and every week or tap our podcast of prior shows on that same app, and there's a two-week archive there and a much longer archive on the WDIY.org website under Public Affairs. We really appreciate our listeners. We appreciate spreading the story. So thank you. We are talking with Bill Henderson, VP and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, and kind of a potpourri tonight, talking about our market recap and trends and what kinds of things we're watching. So, Bill, if you we were talking about some things you're watching, and one of the things you said was interest rates, and I kind of cut you off at the labor and in employment.
Sure.
So what would you like to add to that?
I mentioned the things, you know, that I like to watch the bond market. I think going forward, labor, you know, and the consumer are going to be really important to watch. I mean, the Fed's mandate is to have inflation at an acceptable level and full employment. So whether full employment is 4% is for experts to decide, but that's kind of the ballpark that they like to use. We're not at 4% unemployment yet, and we don't have an average of 2% inflation yet. So that means the Fed is going to continue to watch those two things and decide when and if to raise interest rates, remove the monetary stimulus, I'm sorry. So those two things are very important. And you know, the stability of the banking system, the stability of the Federal Reserve really is the underpinnings of a lot of what makes our economy work, our economy, you know, hum year after year. And, you know, the stability of the dollar as a currency around the world, all of that goes into play. And I think the Fed knows its mandate, and they're going to pay close attention to what they are supposed to watch. I'm looking at, you know, the same data. I want to see, you know, everyone wants to watch inflation. Everyone wants to watch labor. And if you think about the consumer in this case, you know, we've seen the growth play out, the value play out, and now the next big thing is the consumer unleashing all this money that they've gotten through stimulus checks or just from lack of spending.
Right.
You know, lack of having large credit card bills because you haven't been out as much. You haven't been going to restaurants. You haven't been traveling. So there's a huge pent-up demand in the consumer. And that, I think, is going to be a really big piece of the second half of 2021. You know, I think that the government has done its part with fiscal stimulus. The Fed has done its part with monetary stimulus. The next part of this equation is going to be the consumer now with the tools to spend is going to get out there and fuel the economy for the rest of the year. And that's something I'm really going to pay close attention to, looking at, you know, the smaller measures of economic activity.
Because that's always been a part of the GDP in recent years. We're more of a service economy, mm-hmm. and that goes into that GDP numbers as well. So that's interesting that you put it that way. And we might need to have more of the leaders say, hey, folks, get out there and spend. You're part of the equation. Let's make sure this is working. Can we talk for a moment about some it's called high-frequency economic activity, and this was, you know, something that J.P. Morgan is watching, and I thought that's a term I hadn't really heard before, high-frequency economic activity. Can you talk about what that is and what it's telling us relating to the overall economy?
Sure. So high-frequency economics, it's almost, if you break down each piece, it can tell you what it is. Historically, you'd have to wait for big movements in the economy to get released and to know what they are and say, oh, the GDP changed quarter over quarter. When did that come out? 2 months after the quarter closed. So, it's, you know, how do you know what the economy really did? Well, we find out when the Fed tells us. But what a bunch of groups of economists are doing, and these are generally not government economists, but, you know, private sector. So J.P. Morgan, you mentioned, they watch high frequency transactions. So, and a lot of them are consumer driven, debit and credit transactions. So if you think about how many things are done on your phone now, or done on the internet, or done electronically without the use of real green cash,
right.
All of that can be measured, and all of that can be funneled down into a you know, an aggregator of information and then spit out. So some of the things people love to watch in these things, hotel occupancy rates, you know, Uber rides, how many Ubers are tracked at any given Friday night may foretell busy restaurant activity. Restaurant reservations, that's something you can track now. Well, everybody makes open table mm-hmm. reservations now.
I just did it last
just
weekend.
Calling. So if the three of us are making open table reservations on our phone, and I promise you somebody's tracking that information, gathering it all together, putting it into information, you can then say, wow, look how many reservations were made. That type of information. Netflix downloads. During the pandemic, everybody said, holy cow, look how much people are downloading Netflix movies. You know why? Because Netflix sells its data, right? Mm. All these people now have, you know, internet and credit card and iPhone versus cash. You didn't used to be able to monitor cash transactions from bank to bank until longer periods of time expired. Now you can get it, you know, immediately. We know exactly what's happening. If you listen to Monday's you know, CNBC reports, will say restaurant activity was through the roof last weekend. You know, how do they possibly know that? You know, either a combination of credit card transactions, right? People swiping their mm-hmm. card at the restaurant, you and I making open table reservations, mm-hmm. and then an Uber ride back and forth.
It's
you
amazing.
Lump all three of those pieces of data together, and that's high frequency economic activity that then we can use to measure a different type of economic output. And that's what I think going into the rest of 2021, you're going to see the consumer is the engine behind growth going forward, not so much government and corporations.
Wow, that's amazing. What else do you see going on? Anything else?
For this, I think we need to pay attention to demographic trends. So we've seen, at least anecdotally, people moving from urban settings to more suburban settings. They did it during the pandemic when a lot of the major cities emptied out. And I think some people got a taste of suburban life, a little more space. I get to drive everywhere. It's cooler. Rents are cheaper. Access to parking and restaurants. Maybe I like this lifestyle. Millennials are finally settling down, wanting to buy houses, wanting to you know, get married. Do all these things that are now requiring different actions and spending patterns than when you lived in the city. We've also seen, though, a downside of demographic changes. You see a high unemployment level, right? But yet, don't we all see help wanted signs everywhere
yeah,
we go?
Yeah.
And that's a weird thing. Why is that the case? Why is there a high unemployment, but yet everybody needs help. Well, I think this is also not just my theory and not really a factual theory, but I think we saw movements around the country from sort of one region to another. Maybe this family all moved back to be with their other family and they liked it there. And so the labor pool has to sort of rebalance. Mm-hmm. You know, I used the chip example with cars and laptops. I think labor and the demographics of labor movements have to come back into check. You know, where we need employees, there might not be a supply of employees, but there might be a supply of employees 1,000 miles away, but they're not coming back anymore. So all that has to rebalance. And, you know, that's something I'm watching. So I'm not saying that there's a number out there that says this is an actual fact, but I really think that's what's going on with some of these imbalances that are not easily explained, you know, with a chart or a you know, a simulator. And also, you know, you said, what am I watching? Is it the, we had a whole radio show about this, responsible investing in ESG.
Let me mention that ESG, we had done that several weeks ago, and that podcast would be available on WDIY.org under Public Affairs. Just scroll down, look for Bill Henderson, and the title was probably Responsible Investing, mm-hmm. and it could have been a quarterly market review as well. We kind of married those together. Yep. So any podcast with Bill Henderson that you would find would probably have that as one of them.
Thanks for that plug, Lori, even though this is public radio.
Yes.
You know, really ESG, responsible investing, and a global movement towards, you know, a carbon neutral environment. So this is where all your economically developed countries are saying we are going to be carbon neutral by 2050, 2060. Seems like a long time away, but it really isn't. When you look at the investment that needs to get put in place to obtain carbon neutral, there's going to be a lot of spending in that. If you have all the governments of all the economically developed countries pushing in that direction. And I think I said it in our call that when you have the largest investment players, so the largest investment managers managing $20 to $30 trillion saying ESG is the way to go, responsible investing is going to work, you need to follow that and say, you know, these people are going to do it. I'm not, and this isn't me saying this is the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. This is saying, you know, if you want to follow the money and look at where investment's going, a carbon neutral environment is really the push right now. And then lastly, electric everything, like electric cars, electric leaf blowers and, you know, chainsaws.
Lawnmowers.
We are making incredible improvements in that technology, in improvements in battery technology where a smaller battery can last a longer time and produce more output than it could a year ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And, you know, our founder drives an electric car, and he was most concerned about the value of that car declining immediately because his battery technology was worth nothing the minute he drove it off the lot. You know, and I think that's going to happen with everything. So that means continued increases in battery technology. Like, how are we going to get an iPhone battery to last longer than, what does mine die about 1 o'clock and I have to plug it in? We don't want to be plugged in. We want to have batteries that last longer. So that type of technology is going to go on forever.
Not forever, but
improvements in technology.
Yeah, and I think that the batteries are lasting longer because I know I used to have to plug in my phone more right. often and I don't have to as much either. So some of these trends you're watching and the interest rates and the yield curve and the bond market and the GDP and labor, it all informs you on where markets might go, and that might play into some investment decisions, possibly. But at the same time, we did talk about diversification and kind of staying the course a little bit.
Yeah, I these days becoming educated and informed about investing it's the easiest it's ever been in any time I can remember. You can look up any complicated term on the internet and find out what it means. Sadly, people spend probably more time researching an iPhone than they do investing their life savings. You know, and maybe they're equally important to some people, right? I don't know that. But you can spend a lot of time on one thing and not a lot on the other. And I think investing requires a little bit of education and a large amount of understanding. And it's not really that complicated. The diversification part is important. A long-term financial plan is important. And, you know, getting with someone you trust is just as important.
Well, and I think being educated is what keeps you from panicking.
Yeah, that's a great point. Panic is bad.
Well, Bill, thank you so much. So Bill Henderson, VP and Head of Investments at Valley National Financial Advisors, thank you so much for being
Good.
Here
Best
tonight.
Always,
always a pleasure.
Much.
And we'll have you back next quarter as well. So, folks, if you have questions or questions came up during the show or things you'd like us to cover, topics you'd like us to cover, you can send those questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Next week, I'm going to have the topic Children, investment and tax considerations for them and you. And this could include grandchildren or nieces and nephews. Children, investment and tax considerations for them and you. I want to thank Shandi for being here. Listeners, thank you so much. And again, thank you, Bill Henderson. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices.